Our illustrious Rashi Yeshiva will speak about various Chidushei Torah of the Rav. I'm here in order to give you a little bit of a glimpse of the Rav behind the curtain, if you will. When we used to come back from the Shir, I have to say it was the first time I didn't know Rabbi Ganak before I was in the Rav Shir. Rabbi Ganak was already out of the Shir, but he used to come in, I remember, and sit in the back corner, in the corner, the right corner of the Shir room. And virtually every time that Rabbi Ganak came, he asked a question on what the Rav was learning. And I remember very well, the Rav would pay very close attention to Rabbi Ganak's questions and had to work hard on answering them. So obviously Rabbi Ganak held a very special place with the Rav. But when we used to come back from the Shir, there was a large entourage of fellows that would follow us, you know, to the apartment and be Malava the Rav back to the apartment. Everybody wanted to come in, but they couldn't. We used to have to close the door. So as I said, I'm here to talk about the Rav once we close the door. Who was the Rav? What kind of a person was he? I once walked into the apartment and the Rav was on a phone call. That happened many, many times, but this one was especially unusual. And I sat and I waited. And when the phone call was over, after a while, I said to him, Rebbe, that sounded like a very strange call. The conversation was strange. And he said it was. He said it was a call from England. We used to get calls from all over the world. He was a call from England. And he said, a rabbi called and asked, he said, and remember, we're talking about somewhere around 1980 or so, said, there's someone in his community who doesn't want to be a man anymore, wants to be a woman. So the Rav said that he, and I heard him say on the phone, I can't help you halachically, this is impossible. Nothing can be done but try to help the person this way and that way, and psychologists and this and that. But he said, Al Pi Din, there's nothing we can do to help this person. And then the Rav said to me, can you imagine the torment that that person is going through? Can you imagine what that must be like? And that was the first time that it hit me to see the Rav's concern for the individual. The Rav dealt with matters large and small, halachic issues that affect all of us. He never lost sight of the individual. And I saw this many, many times. But that was a dramatic example of it. I will tell you that the Rav was a man of three characteristics. He was a man of simplicity. He was a man of generosity. And he was a man of spirituality. And these, for those of us who were zocha to be very close to him, these were very, very apparent. He was a person who had no airs about him, no demands. He made no demands. He was very, very easy to care for. As Rabbi Ganak mentioned, he, as everyone knows, it's very famous, he called himself a simple melamed. He knew he was not a simple melamed in terms of the big picture. But the truth is that he saw himself that way. He saw himself as a simple person. As difficult as that might be to believe, considering who he was a simple person in his own eyes. I remember once he told me suddenly, there was a very big issue going on at Yeshiva at the time, which I'm not going to get into, but the Rav said, let's go to Dr. Lamb's office right now. So I said, Rebbe, let me call ahead. Let me call his office and let them know that we're coming. He said, no. Just get my hat. Let's go. So we went. And of course, Rabbi Lamb stopped whatever he was doing. And he took the Rav into his office. And Rabbi Lamb said, Rebbe, I would come to you. Why are you coming to? I would come to you anytime that you want to speak to me. I'll come to your apartment. And the Rav knew that very well, which is why he didn't do it. Because he had covered for the office, he had covered for Rabbi Lamb, and he was not going to allow Rabbi Lamb to come to the apartment. And then there was the time that Rabbi Lamb was giving a shiur. I believe it was Dr. Belkin's yahrzeit. I believe it was that shiur. And of course, it was before the Gluck building where the main base medrash was built, where the main base medrash is now. And the Rav used to come in my time, the Rav came in on Tuesday mornings, and Rabbi Holzer used to bring him to the apartment. And then I'd give him something to eat, and we'd get ready for the shiur. That's how it went every week. But I knew that Rabbi Lamb was giving the shiur in the base medrash, in the old building. But I didn't tell the Rav right away because I knew he would meet. And then I would get into big trouble. So I made sure he ate something. I said, Rabbi Lamb is giving that shiur now. He said, oh, let's go right away. So we went. And everyone, I think, knows those doors. They have windows. And we went and I looked inside and Rabbi Lamb was giving the shiur, and there was a table, and there was a chair that was obviously set for the Rav. And I looked inside, and the place was packed. There were hundreds of people in the Beis Medrash. Rabbi Lamb was already speaking. And as I'm about to open the door, the Rav said, wait, I want you to go inside and tell everyone not to stand when I come in. That's one of those moments. And I knew that wasn't going to work. The Rav was not always the most practical person. I said, I had to overrule the Rav. I said, Rebbe, if I do that, it's going to cause more of a disruption than if we go in, everyone will stand, and then they'll sit down and Rabbi Lamb will continue. It'll be much, much less of a disruption if we do it that way. And I'm praying, please let the Rav listen to me. And he thought for a moment. He said, okay, let's go. So we went in and kachava, everyone stood, he sat, and Rabbi Lamb continued. There was nothing about this, which is phony. The Rav, when the Rav says, I don't want everyone standing for me, he means it. He was, believe it or not, a simple person. He saw himself as a simple person, and certainly he would not want to interrupt the shiur to have everyone stand for him. The Rav showed great concern for his family, for his children, for his grandchildren. He used to speak to me about different things. And just like anyone else. And that's how he saw himself. So the Rav was, I would say, first and foremost, a man of simplicity. The Rav was also a man of great generosity. He was very generous when it came to tzedakah. extremely generous when it came to tzedakah. But the most valuable thing that the Rav had was his time. And it was my job to organize his time and to protect it when he was in New York. And there were meetings all the time with Jewish leaders that came to see him. All kinds of people came to see him. And his time was very, very precious. And it was very common that people did not want to leave. And that also is where I had to step in. They did not want to leave. I can tell you that in all my time with the Rav, never one time did I see the Rav end the meeting. Never. He would have gone on and on and on to everyone's delight. But I, of course, could not allow that to happen. But he would not end the meeting. There were times he showed what I could recognize as signs of exhaustion, but they wanted to keep talking to him. In fact, I remember when the Rosh Yeshiva, there were times when the Rosh Yeshiva would come together to speak to the Rav. And the conversations always started with something in a sugya that was being learned in the yeshiva that year. The Rav would always, even though the Rav learned a different mesechta from the yeshiva most of the time, he would speak about the sugyas in the mesechta that they were learning, and then the meeting would begin. And again, they would want to keep going. Important matters for sure, but sometimes the meetings, of course, they had to come to an end. But the Rav would never end those meetings. In all my time with the Rav, never once, with no exception, did I ever hear the Rav speak against anyone. Never. One time, it was one afternoon, and there were a couple of hours free, and suddenly there was a knock on the door of the apartment, and there was a fellow who came. It was a yeshivish fellow who came, and he was very jittery, very nervous. He said, "I must speak to Rabbi Soloveitchik." So I said, "How can I help you? What do you need to speak to him about?" He said, "I must speak to him right now about the Torah and Einstein's theory of relativity. Right now, I must speak to him." And he's the only person in the world, for sure, who would be able to speak to me about this. It's not as if the Rav prepared for this in any way. So I went inside and I said to the Rav, there's this gentleman who would like to speak to you about this. And there were a couple of hours before our next meeting. Yeah, there were some afternoons which were wonderful because the schedule was relatively light. And the Rav said, okay, bring him in. And I thought to myself, as I brought this gentleman in to speak to the Rav about Torah and the Einstein's theory of relativity, I thought to myself, it's not like you had a phone, you could record things, you know, and have a recording device. I thought, well, this is going to be great. This is just going to be great. And then they spoke about it in Yiddish, which was disappointing. But the Rav was very, very generous with his time, very generous with his knowledge. Rav Malkiel Cutler, the Rosh Yeshiva in Lakewood, told me that when he was sitting Shiva for his father, Rav Shneur Cutler, in the middle of the Shiva, he said he was going to lie down one day, take a rest, and suddenly someone came and said, "You have a phone call to Rabbi Soloveitchik." And he got on the phone, and the Rav said to him, "I was very close with Rav Aaron. I was a friend of your father, and now I'm your friend." And he said, Rav Malkiel Cutler said, he never forgot that generosity. He was so touched by it that the Rav wanted to say that to him, and he never forgot it. I saw the Rav interact, his generosity extended very far. So the Rav interact with non-Jews, with the woman who used to clean the apartments, Mrs. O'Shea was her name, and she adored the Rav because he was so nice to her, so good to her. There was a male nurse who used to come from time to time to help the Rav with certain things. Also, the greatest respect. And on Thursdays, I used to bring the Rav to the airport, put him on the shuttle to Boston on Thursday afternoon after the shir. It was always easy to get a driver. And I used to, you can imagine, this post 9/11 now, it's hard to imagine. I used to get on the plane with him. You can imagine getting on a plane that you're not going to fly on. I used to get on the plane, used to put the seatbelt on him, and I would always go to the stewardesses and I would say, please, make sure that you notice that he's, and they always say to me, some of them I got to know a little bit because it was week after week. They said, oh, the professor, we know the professor. We know the professor. That's how they called the Rav. And he's wonderful. He's so nice to us. He's so good to us. He's so generous to us with the way that he speaks to us. That was the Rav. Extremely generous person, easy to get along with. Of course, when I was in the shir, is beyond the days where he was tough in the shir. Rabbi Talbus and I were in the shir at the same time. The Rav was not tough in those days. He was not the same person outside of the shir room. He was not tough. He was not demanding. Very generous, very simple. But most importantly, the Rav was a man of spirituality. And this, if you were close to him, was something you could not miss. You could not miss. If you were to ask me for anything in Torah, in the Chumash, or in Tanakh, anywhere, that describes the Rav in his essence, it would be the pasuk in Tehillim, "Va'ani kivat elokim li tov." The Rav was a person who lived with Hashem at his side. The Rav actually spoke about that. He spoke about the hand on his shoulder when he was learning. That this was not imagination. This was reality for him. He actually spoke about it. But you could see it. Va'ani kirvat Elokim li tov. You could sense it in him. This is spiritually, he worried about spirituality even in Psach. And in his learning, we all know that one of the formulas that the Rav worked with, and if you think about so much that the Rav said, so much that he wrote, there's so much about inner religious experience. That's who the Rav was, not just in his speeches, but in his apartment, that inner religious experience. He worked with the concepts of Maisa and Kiyum. A brisker concept of Maisa and Kiyum, of performance and fulfillment. And he talked about inner fulfillment. Sometimes he separated Maisa and Kiyum, because Kiyum, he said, sometimes is balev. Kiyum is something that happens inside you. The Rav was someone who lived with Hashem at his side. During the Yomim Noraim, and even between the Yomim Noraim, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when the Rav would come in and give shir, he was not the same person that he was the rest of the year. He was much more inward. He was much more distant, harder to reach, because he was that much more spiritual. It was a different time. He experienced Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and everything else in ways that he described. And as I said, even in Psak, he worried about spirituality. One of the things that's known about the Rav is that in the old days, going back into the 1950s, so at that time, we don't have this in the smicha program today at all. We don't have the situation where people who would get smicha would go to shuls that didn't have mechitzas. We don't have such things today. But it was well known that the Rav allowed people to take shuls without mechitzas for a certain amount of time. And he would tell them, you have a certain amount of time that you may be there, a certain amount of years, 2, 3 years, whatever it was. If you cannot put a mechitzah in the shul, you must leave. That was the Rav's, it was well known that the Rav used to tell that to people. One time, a fellow in the shir asked me for an appointment with him, and he came to the apartment, and he said, I'd like to ask the Rav a question. He says, I have an opportunity for a shul, and there's no mechitzah. What does Rebbe say? So the Rav sat there for a moment and said, I cannot give permission for such a thing. And the fellow from the shir was shocked, because he had already come in with his question and his answer. But the Rav said no. So he said, Rebbe, let me explain. It's a shul, I'm going to put a mechitza in. He said, the Rav said that I did understand the question, but the answer is no. And he left disappointed, very disappointed. And I remember that I came back into the apartment. I walked the fellow out and I came back into the apartment and I didn't say anything. And the Rav sat down. The Rav said, wait a moment. And he said to me, I surprised you, didn't I? So I said, actually, Rebbe, yes. Because you sometimes say yes to these questions. He said, yes, I do. But he, meaning that fellow, he'll get stuck. He'll get stuck. He was postulating for the individual. The Rav spoke about this often, that he could not publish his Piskei Halacha. He said it was family tradition not to. He could never do it because he passed in for the individual. He'll get stuck. I cannot give him permission to do this. He was concerned about the spiritual life of that fellow also. The Rav lamented and said, they know I can give a shir. They know I can analyze the sugya. They want me for my mind, but they don't know what's inside me. The Rav lamented that. They don't know what animates me. I don't know if the Rav is right or wrong. I don't know. It's hard to judge. But what I do know is that what animated the Rav, what made the Rav tick, was va'ani kirvat elokim li tov. I want to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to live that way. I want to be there all the time. We cannot all be the Rav. As Rabbi Ganak said, we will not see another person like this in our lifetime. All the pieces of the Rav. We can't hope to give a shir like the Rav. We can do the best we can. But what we can do, what applies to all of us, is va'ani kirvat Hashem li tov. We can get closer and closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our own lives. So on his yortzeit, on the Rav's yortzeit, if you want to take something that he lived for day by day, become a little bit closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vani kirvat Hashem li tov. Feel good in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because his hand is on everyone's shoulder.